fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app.
Get juicy California red, green, or black seedless grapes for 99 cents a pound. Then get tender USDA Choice boneless beef chuck roast for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Because if you started pulling on these accounts at 60, and in theory you can live to be 95, and you haven't added since you were 50 years old, let's say you stop adding your retirement at 50, you really need your retirement account to last 45 years. It's a very long time.
It's a long time, yeah.
Because you're going to be pulling on your account more than you contributed to your account. Hello, and welcome to Financials Podcast Future Rich. I am your host, Barbara Ginty, and I'm also a CFP. And I am here with my guest today, Tegan. Hi, Tegan.
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you. So why don't you fill myself and our listeners in? So age, location, job, business, income, all of that jazz.
Yeah, great. Okay, so I am almost 40. My birthday is actually next week. So kind of feels like an exciting turning point in adulthood. I live in Minneapolis. I've been here for 11 years. Previously, I was in Washington, D.C. I live by myself. I have a partner, but we don't cohabitate or share expenses, so he's not really part of my finances.
Okay.
And I am a strategic communications consultant. So most of my career has been at nonprofits, both in D.C. and then here in the Twin Cities. But last year, I started my own consulting practice. So I'm at not quite a year and a half into my own business.
Wow. How's that going?
Yeah, it's going great. It's been really fun. It's been really just nice to kind of try a new adventure, be out on my own. I always tell people it's completely different stressors than working within an organization, like totally different pros and cons. But I feel like with work, so much is just figuring out what are the cons that you can deal with and what are the cons that you can't. So far I'm loving it. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. But you're right. It is owning a business and running a business is a completely different. I think some people assume if you own your own business, there's just no stress, that it's just everything you like.
Right.
To do all the time. And I really, when people go to do own business, like you still are going to have parts of it that you don't like at all, just like your job.
Yes,
it's
absolutely.
Just a little bit different in terms of like your list of pros and cons.
Totally. Yeah. It's just a different experience. And yeah, there are some days when I am trying to manage like a technical or software issue on my own that it's like, wow, it'd be great to call somebody, but I just have to figure this out myself. But then there's other days where it's like, oh, this is so great. That kind of, obviously my clients are my boss. It's not like I'm truly just my own boss, but it's like,
yes.
Yeah. There's still that feeling of ownership and agency that I really enjoy.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. I was talking to a girlfriend who had been in corporate America for a long time, and I've been out of corporate America now longer than I was in corporate America. And she was thinking about starting a business, and she said something. I was like, well, you just like throw up a website. And she's like, I don't know that I know how to throw up a website. And I was like, oh, and she was like, I've never done a website. And I was like, oh, it's super easy. There's like these vendors and you just like type it. You could do it like in a Friday night. And she was like, I don't think I could. I was like, yeah, you can. And then I realized the one thing that you learn when you own a business is every problem is yours. So like you said, with tech or a website. And so you just learn that anytime there's a problem, you're just like, okay, I just solve the problem. It doesn't matter what the problem is, I just solve it. And so you, pro and con list, as you said, but I think that's one of the interesting things about being an entrepreneur is like, when I worked in corporate America, if the computer didn't work, I just called the tech people and someone came to I gave them my desk number. They came, I went and got a coffee. I came back and voila, it worked. I never had to know what the magic was that was happening there. And then as you own a business, if your computer breaks, there is nobody to call.
So, right. Yes, it's just like
interesting part.
Googling solutions and trying different things.
Yes.
And then when you figure out one tiny thing, you feel so proud though.
Yeah, and then you're by yourself. You're like, I figured it out. And you're like, oh, yeah. No one's here to know that I did it.
Right, but, exactly, yeah.
Well, that's exciting. I think that's great that you've been doing it. So over a year. So you're through the worst part, I would say.
I hope so. Yeah, I've had people tell me to really give it 3 years in order to be able to evaluate if I like having my own business or not. So one person who's had her own business, I want to say for 7 years, she said, you know, really don't evaluate it till year three, because you might even be planting seeds in year one and two that don't even come to fruition till year three. Yeah. So I think that advice has been really helpful, because I did not have unrealistic expectations for my first year. Like, I've been prepared for the on-ramp. And I think that's great, because if you thought that in the first 6 months you'd be like completely on top of the world, you would be really discouraged.
I agree. I also think with running a business, it's like, I would almost compare it to like doing like a home renovation. Mm-hmm. It's going to take like double the time and probably double the money to get to where you want it to go.
Yeah. Yes.
Because things don't happen on the time frame that you've set. It's like when you're, especially when you're client facing, like the client might not be ready this year. Maybe next year is the year for them. So,
yes.
Exactly. I think 3 years is a good time frame to see if this is for you. I also will say, at a certain point, it is very difficult to go back to corporate America, because you have now, you don't fit in that. You're
right.
Like a round, trying to fit in a square peg, you know? So
totally.
At a certain point, you've ruined yourself from a corporate America standpoint, I think.
Yes. Yeah, I could totally see that. It would be really hard to go into like a really strict environment now, just because it's kind of like, maybe this is a bad metaphor, but like, you know, you come home at the end of the day and like you take off your really uncomfortable pants or your bra and you're like, now I'm relaxed. And then like, I don't want to put those back on. And that's like what it is if I have to go to an office at a very strict time every morning and report to someone else. Like, no, I don't want to put those clothes back on.
That's a perfect analogy.
Yeah.
Of once you have succeeded in entrepreneur land and you're comfortable there, it is a very different world to go back to corporate America.
Yeah, totally.
Well, very good. Well, that's exciting. Okay, so then, so you prepared financially for this change. And so the interesting thing about interviewing entrepreneurs is like, do you want to start with the business income and where we are business-wise, and then go through your personal? Because it's all interwoven at this point.
Yes, it's all interwoven. I have a solo LLC, so everything kind of just flows through my own tax returns. So I do have separate business accounts, and I kind of pay myself a salary from those so that I can reserve like what I'm going to owe for taxes and business savings. But fundamentally, it is all just my personal income, my money.
And so when you pay yourself a salary, are you paying your FICA taxes as you go and your federal and your state, or are you taking distributions and doing estimated? How are you doing your taxes?
Yeah, so I am paying quarterly. So basically at the end of every month, I pay myself, like my business pays me 70% of what I've earned.
Okay.
So it obviously changes month to month. And sometimes it's like 1 month is, you know, half my income for the year or something like that.
Yep.
But I try to save 30% in my business accounts, because that covers my estimated taxes.
Okay.
And I don't have huge business expenses. So the remainder covers, like, I have some subscriptions. Like, occasionally I have a piece of hardware or software I have to buy.
Mm-hmm.
But because I'm doing communications and I'm working at home and then just traveling for like coffee meetings, I don't have huge work expenses, which is good.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah.
So then last year was your first year. What was your revenue last year?
Yeah.
And then you took home 70% of that.
Yes. Let me remember. I didn't totally figure it out in the calendar year, but I think in my first, the first 12 months.
Months, yes.
My gross was $60,000.
Okay.
And then starting this year as a calendar year for 2024, my estimated with all my kind of existing work and existing contracts is 80,000. So it might go up with work that comes in the fall, but that's what I know for sure.
Sure. Okay. 80,000. And then that is the gross for the business, not your 70%.
That's correct. That's the gross for the business.
Okay. Perfect. So then you anticipate you'll take home about 56,000.
Yes.
And since you're paying tax out of the business, it's 56 to you, like in real dollars.
Yeah. Yes, okay. Exactly. So then I kind of, I did it that way so I can think of my income as truly that's the money I have. And don't have to worry about the taxes after it goes into my personal bank account.
Got it. Okay. Because we're the way you're structured. Okay. So then it doesn't always work out this way, but in theory, you have about $4,600 a month to live on if it were to be even.
Yes, in theory.
Which it's,
yeah.
I'm sure it's not.
Right. Yes, it's not. So I have kind of my main savings account is definitely like goes a little up, goes a little down, but it's, you know, a good buffer. So.
Okay. Perfect.
Yeah.
And what were you making before when you left corporate America?
Yeah. So my last full-time job, I was at 115.
Okay.
And then I actually took a little bit of time off. I kind of gave myself a travel sabbatical, which I've tried to do a few times in my career. And then when I like put my stuff in storage, went to travel for a little while. And then when I came back here to Minneapolis and settled down, that's when I launched my consulting practice.
Perfect. I've always been jealous of people. Jealous is not the right word. Always admired people who've taken a break between jobs. It's like such a great idea, I think.
Yeah. Well, you should do it. I encourage anybody to do it. It's like travel is really important to me. And I feel like it's at some point early in my career, it occurred to me that nobody else was ever going to give me, you know, more than 2 weeks off at a time. So I just had to give it to myself. And it's been great. So I've been able to take three periods of time off work to travel.
And how long did you travel for?
Yeah. So this last one, it was actually almost a year. And that was a big goal. So kind of part of my personal story is that coming through COVID and having, like, I had a family member die at a pretty young age. And just kind of I think a lot of people reevaluated our lives during that period of time. And I'd always had this goal to take a year to travel, but I didn't have concrete plans to do it. And it just really struck me like, okay, I better do it now. Like, don't wait for anything that you want to do. So I kind of planned that with my last job when I was leaving. I gave them a really long runway. So I was able to negotiate a leave package with them that helped fund part of that travel sabbatical. And it was great because now, like, when I think about my bucket list, there's so many things I've crossed off because I was able to do that already. So I feel really good going into 40 and feeling like I've accomplished some of my major life goals already.
Okay. So I have like so many questions.
Yeah.
We need a travel podcast. Did you come back at all in a year? Like, or did you stay places long time?
Yeah.
Because I talked about this on the podcast, but my husband and I did a very extended honeymoon because I had always wanted to, I've always talked about this. I've always wanted to take a break between jobs. It's never worked out.
Yeah.
For me, I went Bloomberg, Credit Suisse. Credit Suisse bought the business. And once you own a business, I don't know that I'll never have a gap again.
Yeah.
So, which is fine. So it was like, honeymoon is a socially acceptable time to take a step back. Nobody was like, oh, you're doing to take a honeymoon. That's terrible.
Yeah, right.
You know, so I was like, okay, socially acceptable, which helps when you own a business.
Yeah.
And we did 5.5 weeks, but I think it was a lot. And I was like, I don't know that I ever want to do this again because we were 12 flights, 12 hotels.
Whew.
It just, I felt like I was on the Amazing Race, but it was like, we weren't like doing a scavenger hunt, but I had like an Excel spreadsheet of the things that we had to see and the countries we were going to go to. So anyway, I'd just be curious. So did you stay in places for a long period of time or so it felt less like the Amazing Race?
Yes, I think it was kind of a mixture. So I wasn't away from home for that whole time straight. Okay. The longest I was gone for one period was 3 months. And then, so kind of over the course of that 11 months, I planned a bunch of different trips, but I knew, you know, with my partner and my friends, my community, I didn't want to just leave and be gone for that whole time. Mm-hmm. So the longest I was in one place was Indonesia for 6 weeks. And that was a solo trip, which is also really intense to be that long alone in a very different country. But then I did like a couple trips with my partner. Like, so we went to Japan for 3 weeks. I did a couple of trips with family or to visit family. I did a solo trip to Europe. I went with my parents to Cuba. So I kind of was able to do a lot of different trips and a lot of different destinations. And then some of them were alone, some of them were with people. So it ended up being a good balance. I have met people who kind of leave for a year and don't come home at all, which sounds like it could be amazing, but also I think really difficult. So I knew that I didn't want to do it that way.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. Did you have a favorite place? Like if you were...
I always find it so hard to pick favorites because every place is so different. But like the trip to Japan with my partner was amazing. We'd both been once before and then we were really excited to go back, and it had just reopened after COVID. So it just felt really, really special. And then I would say just being like by myself in Paris, because I just ate pastries as much as I wanted all day. Like just to be, it can be fun to travel with someone else, but also being alone, it's like, you just do whatever you want. And I love it. And Paris is a great place to do whatever you want. So
that sounds incredible.
Yeah.
I love this because I do think one of the benefits of taking care of your personal finances is to give yourself the ability to do the things that you want to do with money. It's not, I mean, obviously, you know, I'm a huge proponent of saving for retirement, but I also think it's super important that you live for today. It's hard to find that balance, but that you're able to use your money to create the life that you want. And that's different for everybody.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. But yeah, that totally, so that kind of sets up the crux of what I want to talk about, because one of the great things about having my own business is I'm in a little bit more of a position to influence my own income. Mm-hmm. So I feel like this is kind of, there's kind of three buckets of questions. One is looking at my current savings for both retirement and non-retirement and kind of figuring out a savings goal for retirement. And then I told you that I would like to, if possible, kind of ramp down from work pre-retirement. I don't think I want to actually fully retire early. And I also don't think I'm in the financial position to do that, but maybe to rely a little bit less on full-time income before I officially retire. And then I'd also like to figure out kind of my target income in order to reach those savings goals, but also to really enjoy my life now. So I want to earn as much as I need, not as much as I can. And I can hustle and earn more if I need to. And I also don't necessarily have to. So that's kind of what I'm thinking about, is like income, current budget, and savings. And just what does that look like in order to reach both the present goals and the future goals?
Okay, perfect. I think we can come up with a good roadmap for that.
Cool. Great.
So let's start with, so I know where your income is, I know where your income previously was. And then, so let's talk about where you are in terms of savings, savings debt, and then expenses, which expenses, when planning for a pre-retirement and a retirement, one of the keys of figuring out how much money you have is having a ballpark of what you're going to need or want to spend.
Yes.
And people always hate that answer. They're like, well, what's the number? And I'm like, well, the number really depends on what you like. Do you want $30,000 for the year, or do you want $130,000 for the year? And then that number impacts where, how much we need to have saved to generate $30,000 or $130,000, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's the very personal part, because I've met plenty of people, households, mind you, households of two people, who are like, we'll be super comfortable on $36,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, great. We can do that. That's really easy. You can have a pre-retirement pretty comfortably there.
Right.
But then I've had other people come in who are like, definitely going to need like $140,000. We have to save a lot more to get to those numbers. The good news is we have time, right? So even if your pre-retirement is in your 50s and you tone it down a little, that gives us 10 years. And then your permanent, as I like to call the old age retirement, even though it's not that old these days, but if we say that's like 65, maybe. And mainly what I want to do is like bridge you to a social security number.
Right. Exactly.
Have you ever looked at your social security statement?
Okay. I did it recently because you invited a different guest to do it. So I looked at it and it was actually way more than I thought it would
be. Social security has a marketing problem. I would like to be in charge of marketing for social security. Nobody has any, everyone's like, oh, I'm not going to get Social Security. It's not worth anything. It's like, really? It's not? Because it's $4,000 a month.
Yes.
That's a lot of money. I don't know who thinks totally. It's not a lot of money. And if your household and your spouse is also bringing in $4,000, that's $8,000 a month to start the month.
Yes.
I was like, that's almost $100,000 in benefits. Who told you that's not a lot of money? People act like they're like, oh, it's not a lot of money. And I'm like, in whose world is it not a lot of money? Yes, if you collect at 62, it will not be a lot of money. For generally speaking, is a very broad stroke approach. I generally say for females who are single, because we have long life expectancies, mm-hmm. you actually have, I think, a better life expectancy if you're not married. Single females, I think, right, are pulled. They're pulled to be the happiest, I think. But just general, being a female, you have long life expectancy. Obviously, family history, genetics, all plays a role. We don't know that. But we just look at gender. Women tend to live longer. And so as you get older, your statistics for continue to get older, right, is it's better, right? So if you hit 65, you're more likely to live longer. And so I like the idea of considering deferring your Social Security till 70, which is your highest best benefit, and between your full retirement age. So for our generation, they haven't even extrapolated the numbers yet, but I think we could get pushed back even a little farther. But with today's information, it grows at 8% from your full retirement age till 70. So you're getting an 8% risk-free return currently. That could all change, but still the 70 number is your highest best benefit. And if we can supplement to get you to a higher benefit, you are living currently on $4,600 a month, right? And if you're 70 benefit, is it 4,000?
It was a little bit less. I want to say it was 3,300, something like that.
3,300. Okay.
Yeah.
So obviously we're going to have inflation between now and then, but also the great thing about Social Security is they have an inflation adjustment. That's real. Nice. Like, it's not just like 1% or 0%. It depends. There are years where it's zero, but there are other years where it's higher. Significantly higher. So that will continue to inflate. Also, you're going to continue to work and pay into the system. And so that will benefit will continue to grow. So I'm so glad you looked at it, because no one ever looks at it. They're like, oh, don't worry about that. It's not worth anything. And I'm like, so your Social Security benefit actually will be probably in 30 years could be around where you're spending now. We have to deal with inflation. Mm-hmm. So that's a great thing to know if you want to do a pre-retirement, that you have this incoming check in the future.
Right. Yes, totally. Okay, right. And I also, well, maybe when we get into the weeds, I am also curious how that impacts like investing in my 401k versus Roth and the tax, because I'm finding it really hard to figure out if I will be in a higher tax bracket in retirement or now. So
I do think with pre-retirement, I do think it's important to have non-retirement assets to do that earlier, because while you can pull from retirement assets before 59 and a half, I believe it's, we would use a 72T. And government agencies, their work retirement plans allow for taking money early, because some government workers retire at 55 often. But on your own, you're not going to have access to that type of plan. And so you could get access to your retirement early by using a 72T to avoid the 10% penalty, but you'd be doing it pretty early at 50 through 59. Right. So I do think that if you want to slow down with work and you're still going to have some income, I think it's smart to save non-retirement assets to supplement yourself during that early retirement, and then let the taxable money continue to defer and defer the taxation, let it continue to grow, and then not use that until your old age retirement.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. So let me give you my savings rundown first.
Okay, perfect.
So in terms of retirement investments, and these numbers are all a little bit rounded. In my IRA, which is a rollover IRA, like from all of my previous work plans, it is $183,000.
Okay.
And then I have a Roth that is at $74,500. And
$74,000?
Yes.
Okay, great.
And then I just started a solo 401k that has just under $1,000 in it so far.
Okay. And why did you decide on the solo 401k? Just curious.
I think it was just honestly like Googling and reading some financial advice and some differences between the kinds of accounts that were available. And then I found one through Fidelity that was like no fees whatsoever. So that's what I went with. But I am totally open to advice on that point.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy California red, green, or black seedless grapes for 99 cents a pound. Then get tender USDA choice boneless beef chuck roast for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So the interesting about the solo 401k, are you doing it pre-tax or Roth? Because you can do Roth with that.
Right now it is pre-tax.
Okay. So as long as you're saving, I don't really care the vehicle. What's available to you as an entrepreneur is a solo 401k. Mm-hmm. And then most likely the other option that you would consider would be a SEP IRA, mm-hmm. which is a percentage of income. So the benefit on the solo 401k is you can do a higher amount because it's not tied to your business income or mm-hmm. your self-employment income. The SEP yeah. is tied to your self-employment income. So you would you have a higher threshold with a solo 401k. Either okay. is fine. There's just like being a business owner versus a corporate employee. There's no right or wrong. Everyone chooses yeah. a different path. But the same thing with the retirement vehicle. So the SEP is going to be tied to self-employment income as a percentage of that. It's pre-tax. The solo 401k has your 401k limits. And depending on your provider, it could be Roth or traditional.
Yeah. Okay. And I set it up as traditional, but I also... that was just based on like some advice I read online and I didn't 100% know if that was the perfect choice or not.
I love that you already have Roth. In my mind, the perfect retirement, which doesn't always exist, is three sources of income, which would be a pension or pension replacement, Social Security, and then your own savings. And then my perfect retirement in terms of types of money is every type of money, which is okay. Roth, traditional, and then non-qualified, so private, regular investment money.
Yeah.
And then obviously an emergency fund if I want it to be
yes.
ideal. And so the reason why is because then you can choose where you want to pull money from and the tax ramifications, and you can mix the monies together to be more tax efficient.
For sure.
Because they're all taxed differently. So traditional IRA monies is going to be taxed at ordinary income rates. Mm-hmm. Roth IRA is not going to pay tax if you meet the qualifiers, right? And then your private investment, so a regular investment account that's not retirement, is going to be taxed at, as long as it's been held for over one year and one day, at capital gains rate, which is a different tax rate than ordinary income.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. So for the non-retirement investments, just my own investments, I have $43,000. And then I do have a little bit of crypto. I have $1,300 in crypto.
Okay. Perfect. Okay, good. And then what about debt?
Yeah. And then, first let me tell you, I do have a high yield savings, which is my emergency
okay.
fund. And that is at about $22,000.
Perfect.
And then my checking account, I only use it like for transactions in and out. So that's $800. And then my business savings and checking, which is the one that's earmarked, like the next tax payment will come out of that. That's at about $5,000 right now.
Okay, perfect.
So yeah, so that's all my savings. And then my only debt is my mortgage. So I don't have any other debt that I'm carrying, and I pay off my credit cards every month. So,
okay, perfect. And what is your mortgage rate?
For the amount of debt that's left?
The amount of debt and then the interest rate.
Yeah, okay. So the amount of debt is $138,000.
Okay.
And my interest rate is 6.15.
So you got it recently or more
yes.
recently?
Yes. Okay. I got it relatively recently and I felt pretty good about that mortgage rate considering everything. So.
Yeah. The average mortgage rate over the last, I think since they've been tracking standardized mortgages is around seven.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
And then how much did you put down on the property?
I put 20% down. So the selling price Great. Was $175,000 and put 20% down.
Amazing. And that's your only debt?
Yes, that's my only debt.
Okay. And then what do your expenses look like?
Yeah. So there's like certain things in here that are kind of write-offs for business expense, but they're still
yes.
part of my personal expenses. So I kind of combined my entire like home category is 1880 a month. So that includes, so like my mortgage and HOA is about 1300 a month.
Okay.
And then I have utilities, including my cell phone, are 180 a month. Everything related to my car, like insurance, gas, maintenance, AAA, et cetera, is 200 a month. And then miscellaneous condo expenses, I've budgeted at about $200 a month, which obviously varies, but that has been able to cover like when I needed to buy a new fridge, as well as any other little things that come up.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's 1880. Then my monthly average for groceries is $300 a month. I should have said I do write off a percentage of like my mortgage and utilities as a business expense.
Yep. Yeah. Okay, perfect. Because you're working from home.
Yes. I do have $350 a month that is like health and disability insurance. Okay. So I can write off the health insurance as a business expense.
Yep.
Then my health expenses, this is kind of a big category because it includes both discretionary like gym membership, but then also this is like doctor copays, medication, glasses, etc. So that the average is $565 a month.
Okay. Is your car a business expense?
It partially is. So my accountant will write off my all like mileage for business meetings and things like that. And then I think that we wrote off a portion of it based on like how much I drive for business versus personal, but I don't remember the exact breakdown.
Okay. But you're getting something for the car as well.
Yes.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure that was included.
Yes, for sure. My average travel per month is $550 a month. And part of why that feels kind of big, but partly it's fun travel, but also I don't have any family nearby. So anytime I want to see family, I have to get on a plane. So that definitely adds to my travel expenses to buy flights. Personal is at about $250 a month. And that I consider like clothes, haircuts, getting nails done, books, all kind of random things I just buy for myself. Gifts I have for $175 a month. And that includes both donations and like birthdays, baby showers, stuff like that. Social expenses average at $380, which includes like eating out and tickets to shows and things like that. And then I think my average business expenses are about $100 a month on average.
Okay.
Which covers networking, coffees, software subscriptions, my accountant's like annual fee, that kind of thing.
So then do you have your total there?
Yeah. So what I have with all of those things I just listed is at about $4,550. So I'm kind of like right at the point with like my income and my budget right now.
Yeah. I was going to say, I feel like we're close here.
Going
through it. But does this feel, because obviously you took a bit of a pay cut, right?
Yeah.
Yes. To do this, but does this feel about comfortable if you had a little more wiggle room monthly?
This feels pretty comfortable. I mean, I would say, like, I would not say that I'm on a really tight belt budget right now. Like, I pretty much, though this is certainly a comfortable budget. So I think what I wanted to do is look into the future and kind of look at like saving more versus earning more and like kind of figure out what my future projection might be.
Okay. Cause I think, cause we have a, cause what it, in here, I didn't hear the retirement.
Oh yes. So I have saved, since I just opened my business retirement, I just basically put $1,000 in there from this year so far. But I haven't set up like regular automated contributions, right?
So I do think as a business owner, it's really important to try and automate those because what will happen otherwise is it can disappear. And so I think you should treat your retirement just like any other bill for the business, right? So I think it needs to be set up as a monthly contribution so that it happens automatically. So it's part of your expenses for the business. Because I do think that is, with business owners, it can be tricky because everything gets taken care of except for you, right? We get everything done. All the bills are paid. The clients have to get taken care of. And then the retirement often for business owners and entrepreneurs gets put on the back burner. And then it's at the end of the year. And then if you had maybe maybe of more estimated taxes. We had more money come in, and so then IRS has to get paid first. And
right,
it's easy for it to slip away.
Yes, totally.
That so I would sense. Do once we figure out how much we should be doing. I would set it up as a monthly. And you can, if you're having a slow month, you can always stop it. But I think it's better that it's that like negative consent. Like you have to go turn it off versus you have to proactively do it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So right now, we're 40, if we just do basic math, let's see. So I'm just going to say that your accounts are earning an average of 7.2%. So that will double every 10 years, right? If we're not adding. So your IRA at 183,000, the rule 72, at 50, it's 366, at 70, it's 732,000. I'm just going to go to 60 for the time being.
Okay.
And then the Roth is going to do something very similar. So it's going to, at 50, it's going to go to 148. And then at 60, it's going to be 296, almost 300. And so then between these two accounts, you'll have over $1 million with the, what I like to call the old age retirement. Now, the textbook rule is you can pull 4% comfortably out of your retirement account. So we're not going to look at the tax ramifications of this, but just to ballpark this, because we are, that would be $40,000 a year coming out in income. Now, a third of it wouldn't be taxable and two thirds of it would be taxable based on your distribution between Roth and, so then let's look at where we have the non-retirement. The non-retirement, we definitely have to get up because that would only be worth $86,000. And so that is not enough, in my opinion, to bridge you 10 years, right? I also think that $40,000 isn't going to be enough for retirement at 60.
Yeah.
With cost, you know, cost of living adjustments and so forth. So I think that the retirement, you don't have to put quite as much in because we have so much more time. You know, the early retirement, you'd want to fund more because it's 10 years, not 20 to 30 years, right? Right now, so you probably would need, if you slowed down on work, could we say you would do half the work? And so you would say it would be
maybe,
like 50%?
Maybe 50 or even like 75. I don't have a firm. I kind of wanted to understand the possibilities, not that I have like a firm percentage in mind.
Okay. Because also if you think about it from the standpoint, then probably at 50, we're not saving for retirement anymore. So we are only going to put more money in for 10 more years into retirement and leave it alone. So let's see what we think we would need for. Okay. So if you put $1,000 away for the non-retirement, that's 120 months, right? That gets us to 120. It's 120,000 you're going to add. It's already going to be worth 86 anyway. There should be some future growth on that. But if we just estimate very conservatively, that'll be worth 200,000. How long is your mortgage for? 30 years?
30 years, yeah.
Okay, so if we could get the non-retirement up to 250,000, if we were pulling 4%, you'd only pull 10,000 off. But if you pulled more, we could deplete some of it. So if our target was to leave 50 in there, right? So that at 60, you still have 50,000 left. So you would pull, you would be spending 20,000 a year for 10 years. That'd be worth, that would be 200,000, right? And that would get you 20,000 in income.
Right.
Which is very tax efficient, right?
Totally.
It would leave you with 50,000 left. Ideally, it depends on, you know, market performance and so forth. And that gets you to 60. We still have 50,000 left. So I think at a minimum, you'd want to do 1,000 into the non-retirement monthly.
Okay.
But I also still think you need to fund the retirement. So that when we get to 60, I think what I would do then, this is all future, is you'd still have 50,000 left in the non-retirement. But if you get your retirement up to a larger number, you could bridge yourself to a higher Social Security number by starting your retirement at like 60.
Right. Okay.
And then the Social Security would come in, and ideally Social Security, let's just say, is $3,500, and then you can turn down the heat on the distributions from the retirement.
Yeah, that makes sense. So yeah, what number would you try to get to by 60 in the retirement accounts?
In the retirement account, I think it would be better if they were closer to like 1.2 million.
Got it.
Because then if you're preserving, if you spend down another 250,000 between 60 and 65, right? Mm-hmm. And we have a million left in the retirement at 65, and that's generating, let's say, 40,000.
Right.
And then let's just say, if you know the Social Security is going to pull in at 67, at 3,500, right? Then 40,000 plus another 40,000 from Social, right? Then
yes,
we get to like right. 80.
Right. For sure. And okay, then, that makes sense.
Does that make sense? And then 50% yes. of your income is fixed in permanent old age retirement, and 50% of your income is variable.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
Does that make sense?
So, yes. And so then, yeah, do you know what my monthly contribution should be to retirement in order to make up that gap?
Yeah, I think I we'd have to plug this into a system. I'm just spitballing this, if you will, right? Because like, I'm not putting into a system. We're not running Monte Carlo. So we're just doing high level 7.2% compounding of interest.
Totally.
So back of the napkin math here, I would think, because you're really only saving another 10 years, right? Because mm-hmm. if we go into early retirement at 50, you really are just going to be letting your retirement grow. I would shoot for another $1,000 a month in the retirement. So the way I would look at it, and this is why with financial planning, it needs to be reviewed on a regular basis.
Yes.
Right? Because you need to see how the returns are doing, how much you're able to save. There's going to be years as a business owner you're not able to do it. And then there'll mm-hmm. probably be another year where maybe you get a big contract and you make more than you normally would make, right? So the right way to do this is to probably get a financial planner to run actual analysis and not just back of the napkin. But my ballpark estimate for you would be, I would do $1,000 into the non-retirement, because that okay. you'll use from 50 to 60. And then it would also increase the retirement. I love the idea of you still putting money into the Roth, so that when you get farther along, you have that breakdown of 2/3 is taxable, 1/3 is not. Your Social Security is taxable up to 85% federally, and it is dependent on your state you live in, whether there's state tax.
All right.
Retirement is more tax efficient in general, yeah. I will say. And it depends on the state. Like, so for instance, in New York State, I don't know your state, but in New York yeah. State, your first $20,000 you pull out of retirement is not taxed at all.
Oh, okay.
So you're only paying federal tax. So and then your Social Security is not 100% federally taxed. It's between 50 and 85% federally taxed, often not state taxed. So the taxes are a little better because it's not straight 100% tax usually.
Yes. Yes. Okay. That makes sense. And then another, I was also curious to know, what are your thoughts on like an HSA? Because when I renew, since I buy my own health insurance, when I renew it for next year, I could go with a high deductible plan with an HSA. Would you recommend doing that? And then like
a hot take on this. I think I'm the only person who's like, I hate high deductible health plans, but I think I think personally that's because of my experience. I have terrible genetics.
Oh no.
Yeah. I have terrible genes. And so a high deductible plan for me doesn't work because I mean, my family is completely riddled with cancer. So when I tell doctors, they're like,
yeah.
Really? And I'm like, yes, I have this all in a spreadsheet. I have the ages, the diagnosis, the secondary cancers. It's all rare. I have a whole document. And then I get a new primary care, it's like, do you really want me? Because I wouldn't want me as a patient. So I don't like high deductible because my family history is very severe. And so I get things checked often because anytime my family member goes to the doctor, it's something really bad. So, and obviously that impacts what health plan you choose. If you are a healthy person and you have great family history and you don't go to the doctors, yes, that can be a fantastic way to get your medical. The HSA is only affiliated with a high deductible plan. And I think that's the misnomer is that people are like, oh, I'm going to save for retirement with an HSA. And I'm like, you only save for retirement with an HSA if you get a high deductible plan and you don't use it.
Yes, right.
My husband married me. My husband is very healthy, does not have nearly the family history that I have. And his company puts money in his HSA for him because he's in a high deductible plan. He married me. He has $0 there. He had no, they just take it. He was like, where did all this money go? And I was like, I went. Yeah. I go to doctors. I'm in like a high risk program and everything.
Okay.
So we only have a choice for his health insurance for work as high deductible. There's no other option. And so we might actually leave his company plan so that I can purchase a non-high deductible plan.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I get test after test. I mean, so he didn't ask enough questions when he married me that I was like, I'm going to spend your high deductible dollars because they don't even ask him. Like it just caught, they just take it out as the bills started coming in. So high deductible plans work for certain individuals, but just like with personal finance, where just because something works for you doesn't mean it works for somebody else. It's the same thing with health insurance. Like you have to know who you are, what your medical needs are, and also your family history. And a high deductible plan can be great. If you go for like one checkup a year, you're generally pretty healthy. That's fine. You can sock away money in an HSA and not use it. The reason why they offer the HSA is because if you do use that medical plan, you are going to have a lot of out-of-pocket costs.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay. That makes sense. No, thanks.
So that's my warning. My preference always with everything with personal finance is you use the vehicle that it was designed to be used. An HSA is designed to supplement a high deductible plan to help you cover pre-tax the additional healthcare costs you're going to have by having that plan if you use it or if you use mm-hmm. it a lot. I also don't like insurance as a retirement vehicle. I like insurance to cover just insurance. I like the healthcare to do your healthcare. And if you end up with some extra at the end, that is a cherry on top is my perspective. And so I think you're better off saving for retirement using retirement vehicles.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. Okay. Another question for you. So with that like 4% withdrawal kind of rule from retirement accounts, is that based on, like, if you were to do the 4% withdrawal and kind of in the hypothetical world where there isn't like a big market fluctuation, does that draw down your retirement accounts or does that maintain the retirement account and kind of just draw off earnings?
It's supposed to draw off earnings so that you're preserving your retirement account. At some point, right, it's not going to work for 50 years.
Right.
Right. So at some point, depending on the actual returns of the account, you could be dipping into principal, but at later years. To give you perspective, the government requires you to take distributions from your retirement accounts. The age currently is at 75, and the factor you start at is 26.4, which works out to be, I think it's 26.4, 3.78%.
Okay.
Because the government doesn't want you to deplete your money, but they want you to start taking it out. And so will you earn 7.2% compounding annual returns in retirement? Probably not, because you're probably going to need to be more conservative. But could you average around between 4 and 6? That would be the goal, right? So the goal is that you're mm-hmm. taking out the income off of the accounts. But knowing that to average 4 to 6 means there's going to be years that it's above that, and there are going to be years that it's below that, right? Mm-hmm. Because we don't just get a fixed, it's very hard. Maybe in our retirement, maybe it will be 4% fixed guaranteed. I mean, we have bank money now, but the issue is you want to be able to average that every year the entire time. So it could deplete it sooner. It just depends on the volatility, but it is around where the government has you start taking the money as well. 3.78.
Okay, that makes sense.
And the government gives you a life expectancy for those distributions to 120 years old. Latest age on their table. It's like,
got it. So they're really covering their bases with that.
Yeah. So they're assuming 120. Now I will say we have clients that are in their 90s, females. So you have it. And this is what I always say to clients. If we have a year where the market does really well, we can always take a little extra, right? No one is ever upset about taking a little extra. It's more that you want to be consistent so that you don't want to deplete, because if you started pulling on these accounts at 60 and in theory you can live to be 95 and you haven't added since you were 50 years old, let's say you stop adding your retirement at 50, you really need your retirement account to last 45 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very long time.
It's a long time, yeah.
Because you're going to be pulling on your account more than you contributed to your account.
Yes. Yeah, that's true.
So if you think about it as a seesaw,
mm-hmm.
it's not even, right? You're not feeding it because you're not feeding it for 35 and then pulling for maybe 35, right? We're going to be feeding it for what, 25-ish?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then we're expecting it to last and feed you for 45.
Yeah.
Do you want to be conservative and careful with it?
Yes. Cool. Okay. Yeah, that's helpful. Okay. A couple more like retirement questions.
Okay.
So I'm kind of assuming, so even though my mortgage rate is not one of the like super low COVID mortgage rates, mm-hmm. it's still lower than average returns. So would you say, do not pay more towards my mortgage, just prioritize saving in both retirement and my regular investments, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would prioritize if you're, because this all comes down to goals, right? And so if mm-hmm. your goal is to be able to reduce your workload at 50, then being completely debt-free wouldn't be the priority because now we're going to yeah. save non-retirement and retirement, right?
Mm-hmm.
So other people might say my goal is to have no debt, like no overhead whatsoever. Then I would say, okay, maybe we try and pay that off in 20 years instead of 30.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, remember, just keep in mind that if you have a really good year with the business and you've taken care of everything, the non-retirement and the retirement, and you mm-hmm. still have the extra money, you can always make an annual principal only payment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It'll save you a little bit. So keep that in the back of your mind that if we have a huge year and you're like, I don't know what to do with all this, you could do one extra monthly mortgage payment towards principal.
Okay. Okay. That's good to know. And then do you think, is there any reason for me to do any, Roth conversion with any of my 401k money? Or do you think that the current split like is good? Leave it as it is.
The current split is good. The time to do Roth conversions would be later on when your income goes down and mm-hmm. you're living on the non-retirement because that's capital gains tax.
Okay.
Yep. And then you have less taxable income. So the time to do a Roth conversion is when you're in a lower or artificially low tax bracket. And so that's where you would work with your accountant and say, I'm 53. I'm living off of investment income, which is the most tax efficient after the Roth. Maybe I should be converting some of my IRA, like $10,000 a year. And then your accountant will say, oh yeah, that's a good idea. You're only going to pay 12% federal on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cool. I wouldn't throw it in on top because the goal is to get your dollars to stretch as far as possible right now
mm-hmm.
with the different goals. So I wouldn't throw a Roth conversion on top of it. Now, that being said, if you say, I'm going to close my business and go back to corporate America and I'm going to look for a job where I'm making $150,000 a year and I'm currently bringing in $60,000, well, then maybe we reconsider doing a Roth conversion before you go back to corporate America.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
It's about being in a lower bracket than usual. And all of this is very high level. Like there are softwares that can run these projections for you. And a financial advisor can put it into a program and give you the exact dollar amount to contribute, the exact targeted amount, what the return needs to be. So this is just back of the napkin, high level.
Yeah.
And then every year I would check on the numbers, but I do think in your case, it'd be worth working with somebody.
Okay.
Because you want to have your numbers right. You want to make sure that. And I think you can definitely do it. And I would say that for your situation, ballpark, you'll probably want to bring in another $24,000 to earmark towards these goals.
Mm-hmm.
And then I wouldn't be stuck on a set 50. Like maybe, because one or two more years sometimes makes a huge difference depending mm-hmm. on market conditions. And so even with retirement, we had a couple people who wanted to retire and then it was 2021 actually was the year that was bad. 2020 came back up and it was 2021. And so sometimes it was like, well, if there isn't a hard, fast reason why we're retiring and it's going to make a huge difference to wait one more year than that. And that's why it's good to work with somebody because they can mm-hmm. be like, so you can do it today. We could absolutely do it. But if you give it one more year and the market recovers or maybe it's one where you're closer to security, there's all these reasons, factors that'll play into it. Or like maybe at mm-hmm. that point, you're going to sell and move somewhere else. So I do think in your scenario, it would be worth maybe working with someone to refine all of your numbers and get actual, I'm saying 2000, maybe they'll be like, it's 2200 and this, yeah, you need to make 8%. And if, or whatever it is, someone can tell you with the software. I just am using a piece of paper here.
Yeah.
So, but I think it's possible. Yeah. And I really think it comes down to the fact that right now the business is covering all of your expenses. And I think then what you want the business to do, and this is personal choice, because there's nothing wrong with your current expenses. And it sounds like you have a nice lifestyle. You have a lot saved already. Mm-hmm. So it comes down to like, am I going to take the additional contract so that I can beef up my retirement and retire? The only reason you're going to be doing is really so you can A, stop saving for retirement before retirement and mm-hmm. have a pre-retirement. So that's a personal choice. And you can make, this is what I would say my advice would be, is you can choose to do it 1 year and decide it's not for you and not do it the next year. And then maybe get re-inspired and do it again. And then maybe it's 55 because it's every other year you take extra work.
Yes. No, totally. No, that makes a lot of sense. And I appreciate that. Well, and it's nice to just feel like in a position where I do get to make those choices. So that feels really good.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. I think that the key here is your budget is really realistic. You have no debt. You own your home and you're in control of your income. So mm-hmm. it's up to you. And that's why I would say I wouldn't be beholden to 50 and I wouldn't be beholden that you have to do it every year. I think you would, if I were in your shoes, I would take it year by year. There'll be years with the business where you're like, other things are happening in my life and I'm just going to make what I need. And then there'll be yeah. other years you feel really inspired and it feels really easy. And maybe you do double that.
Yeah, absolutely. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. This was really helpful. And you've answered like so many questions. So I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah,
so for all of our lovely listeners, if you like the show, please share it with a friend. And you can also subscribe. And you can follow along for our most up-to-date information on YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram. Time for our disclaimer. The opinions voiced in this podcast are for general information only and not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. All performance references are historical and do not guarantee future results. Make sure that you consult with your own legal, tax, and/or financial advisor before making any decisions.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy California red, green, or black seedless grapes for 99 cents a pound. Then get tender USDA choice boneless beef chuck roast for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.